Hi guys, it's Matt here. Unfortunately, the audio on this one is not great. Yeah, apologies for this one. We've had to pull the feed straight from the sort of Twitch stream, so this is the best we can do, I'm afraid. Thank you.
I'm Cass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golliver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Donon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Double Clutch Podcast. I'm Mike Miller. Tonight, I am joined by Harry Lights Out Harrison.
I've got a light on this time.
You have got a light on this time. You've got two lights on because you've...
I've got all the lights on.
All the lights. And joining us as a special guest, as you can see on the right-hand side of the screen, is Matt Elvey of Suns Fans UK. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. And as we are getting ready to record this, we found out that not only, well, we knew we lived in the same area, but we literally lived two streets away from each other. So here we go, neighbours. It's... Should have had you on before now. I feel bad now that I know that you're around the corner.
Well, yeah, it makes stalking a lot easier.
Excellent. Thanks, as always, to Kirk for making the magic happen behind the scenes, sat on the back of the bus. Thanks to Matt Wellington, who will be producing the audio-only version of this afterwards. If you're not already, make sure you're following us at Double Clutch UK on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. We have a Discord community, discord.me/doubleclutch, and we have a Twitch channel. So if you are listening back and fancy seeing all of us, our faces, except for Kirk, because he's way in the back of a bus, literal bus, twitch.tv/doubleclutchuk for all those watching already. Thanks for coming out tonight. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with us. We appreciate that. Lots to get around today. We're going to start with around the association. So it's been a heck of a week. We've got 2 weeks left in the NBA season, and the week started off with Chris Paul breaking the Knicks win streak. Kevin Love threw a tantrum. The Timberwolves beat the Jazz, completing a three-game series sweep of the season against the league leaders. The Blazers' Anthony Simons goes 9-for-10 from three, made his first nine straight, the first player to do so since Klay Thompson in 2019. We miss you, Klay. On Wednesday night, Houston Rockets guard Kevin Porter Jr. was fined $50,000 for violating the league's health and safety protocols, which prohibits things like indoor social gatherings, going to clubs, etc. I think it might have been the latter. Houston seems to have a reputation for that. Not 24 hours from receiving that fine, he went out and dropped 50 points with 10 assists on the Milwaukee Bucks, becoming the youngest player to get 50 points and 10 assists, beating LeBron James's record. The Denver Nuggets are 9-1 since Jamal Murray tore his ACL, and they're now third in the West. They beat the Heat, the Rockets twice, the Grizzlies twice, the Blazers, the Pelicans, the Raptors, and the Clippers. They only lost one game to the Dubs. Kevin Durant's stats for the season are just insane, considering how injured he's been. He just keeps coming back and being just amazing all the time. Domantas Sabonis became the third player with a first half triple-double since 97-98. These feel like really heavily caveated stats, don't they? And with 2 weeks to go, Phoenix and Utah are tied for the 1-2 seed, but Phoenix have the tiebreaker. I think they're 3-0 in that series as well, aren't they? Denver is half a game up on the Clippers for third. Denver has the tiebreak there. The Lakers, the Blazers, and Dallas are all tied for fifth, but because of the way the tiebreaks work, at the minute, the Lakers are in the seventh seed. Lonzo Ball joined Jason Kidd, Antoine Walker, and Russell Westbrook as the only players to have 8 threes, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, and 3 steals in a game in NBA history. And Luka Doncic dropped a career-high 20 assists to go alongside 31 points and 12 rebounds, becoming the first player in Mavs history to drop 20 dimes in a triple-double. It's only the fourth time in NBA history that someone has gone 30 points, 10 rebounds, 20 assists. That's Oscar Robertson, Magic Johnson, Russell Westbrook, and now Luka. He also became the first player since Chris Paul in 2016 to have at least 20 assists with one or fewer turnovers. Only 6 players have done that in NBA history. Well, I say NBA history. Again, it's caveated to 96. Stockton, Avery Johnson, Steve Nash, Devin Williams, CP3, and Luka. The triple-double was also Luka's 17th 30-point triple-double, passing MJ and tying Larry Bird and Magic Johnson for 6th all-time. Just a little reminder, Luka Doncic is 22 years old. Speaking of Russell Westbrook, he dropped 42, 10, and 9 as the Wizards lost to the Mavericks. The Wizards are 2-16 in their last, 2-16. That's 18. Last 18 games where one of their players has dropped 40 points or more. Duncan Robinson became the fastest player in NBA history to reach 500 threes. It took him 152 games, making 3.3 per game. Last night, the reigning MVP dropped 49 on the Bucks. Well, for the Bucks, sorry, as they squeezed out a win against the slightly shorthanded Nets, who got 42 from KD. And as I mentioned earlier, LeBron James has returned for the Lakers. He's gone 0-2, losing to the Kings and the Raptors. As I noted, they're in the seventh seed, aka his playing spot. And LeBron had some thoughts about the new format. To quote Bill Oram, he said, whoever came up with that shit needs to be fired. And your players of the week are Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns with 29.3 points per game, 4 rebounds, 3.5 assists, and a 4-0 record. And Jason Tatum with 42.7 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, and a 2-2 record. That was a hell of a lot of things to go through. Matt, what was your favourite moment of the week?
The Suns making the playoffs for the first time since 2010, when a couple of Knicks coaches were running the team.
Yep, that is pretty impressive. Yeah. I know that you started a challenge online to show what you look like with the last time they made the playoffs. If you haven't already checked that out, go and check out Matt, Suns Fans UK, on Twitter to go and see what he looked like the last time the Suns made the playoffs. Harry, what was your favourite moment of the week?
Mine's not quite as cool as your team making the playoffs, because my team can't make the playoffs now. The Timberwolves are out of playoff contention. But my favourite moment was a very small moment during the Timberwolves versus Warriors game that brought me joy, and it was Karl-Anthony Towns dunking on Andrew Wiggins. And
that's quite satisfying. That's such a petty thing as well. Fair play. Okay, so let's dive into a couple of bits more deeply. Let's talk LeBron James, the Lakers, and the play-in spot, because, I mean, it's interesting that a year ago he was suggesting there should be a play-in, and now he's in the potential position to be in that play-in and is not keen on that happening at all anymore. Sitting atop of the Western Conference and the way the play-in works, do you have any concerns about not knowing who your opponent is for at least a day or two after the regular season has ended?
It depends. If the Lakers drop down, yeah. but I think a lot of the teams that are in there right now, not so much. So I think you've always got the advantage that they've already played one, maybe two games. I'm not too worried, I don't think. If the Lakers do go down, that is something to worry about.
Yeah, that could be. So for anyone not aware, the way the play-in works, the seventh seed will play the eighth seed. The winner of that becomes the seventh seed. The ninth seed will play the 10th seed. The winner of that will play the loser of the 7-8. And whoever wins that third game becomes the eighth seed. Clear as mud. Harry, do you like the format? Do you think it should stay? Is LeBron justified in trying to have someone's job removed?
I mean, the last time we talked about the play-in, I didn't really know what I was on about. But obviously, in the last couple of weeks, I've had more of an opportunity to actually take in what the play-in actually is. And I like the idea. Mainly that's probably because I'm a fan of a team who's going to struggle to make the playoffs anytime soon anyway, and it probably gives us a bit better of a chance. But I do like the idea, and I think that LeBron is, as you said, he liked a similar sort of idea a couple of years ago, but now that there's the possibility that the Lakers, who are in poor form, are going to have to take on somebody like, you know, a team who wants to beat them to make the playoffs, now that that's a possibility, and it may mean that he'll just end up dipping out the playoffs entirely, he's evidently not a fan. I don't think anyone's job needs to be lost, of course. I'm all for job security. I'm sure this person who's come up with that idea should definitely keep their job. But I think LeBron is just getting a little bit scared of the fact that he's possibly not going to make the playoffs now.
I think it's an interesting situation because obviously he's sort of not quite at full health. So maybe he's rushed back because they've slipped and he didn't want to be back on court at this moment. normally, you know, if there wasn't a play-in, they'd be fine. You know, they're relatively safe. But obviously, he doesn't want to play any more games than he has to. He often, there's the traditional LeBron feel out game one of a series, which can't happen in a single game series. It's just an interesting situation. Do you think he's moaning maybe just a little bit too much?
A little bit. I think my favourite bit is if it was Adam Silver that come up with the idea. He's telling Adam Silver that he shouldn't have a job anymore. So I quite like that bit. But I think it can work, the play-in. And I think he is just moaning because of those things that you just highlighted. But yeah, I don't really like it too much.
Okay.
So I know we almost benefited from it last year and it made sense because it was a crazy time. But it works in the West because you've got so many teams with winning records. So the guys that are going to be in that playing tournament are all virtually, maybe one won't, but they're all pretty much going to be winning teams. So they're fighting for the playoff position, kind of makes a bit more sense, gives them a chance to get in. But on the East, I mean, the current 8th spot Hornets, they don't have a winning record. So for me, it works if you have one league. But that's never going to happen, I don't think. So yeah, I can see why he doesn't want it to happen. But I think if he was at the if they were like the home court or maybe sitting fifth, I don't think he'd be making those comments.
We share incredibly similar opinions on the need to restructure the league. I say that I'm reaching out. I'm very much conference abolishment on that side of the fence. Do you not think, though, it adds a huge amount of excitement? It reduces a team's desire to just tank and just basically throw away a third of the season when the 8th seed is out of reach and, you know, the only way to go now is down to try and improve your pick chances. Do you not think there's any benefit to the way that it is now in creating more, just more excitement in terms of these games now? We're going down to the wire with lots of teams not knowing whether they can have a postseason spot.
It certainly made the trade deadline interesting as well, because there was quite a lot of teams that would usually be selling. And in the end, I know there was a record amount of trades or players transacted, but actually the amount of teams involved wasn't that huge. But yeah, it is exciting. I just think it can't work the way the league currently is. If we want it to be fair and exciting, because everyone's going to watch the West ones. And like, if you're watching two teams with rubbish records going against each other, it's not the same.
Harry, your thoughts?
I like watching two crap teams play against each other. I think it's like, and that's probably because, again, as I said, the Minnesota Timberwolves are crap and have been crap for a long time. And as much as it frustrates me to watch them play and just watching them on the court do everything wrong, when they're playing against another team that does everything wrong, I find it quite enjoyable because sometimes the Wolves win a game. And, I like that. So for two crap teams to go against each other with losing records for the potential of winning the playoffs, I think that'd be quite entertaining because they're like, well, as I say, we're rubbish, but we can still make the playoffs here. So, you know, let's give it a good crack. And they're going to be quite entertaining games. I like the matchups we've seen so far with teams who are kind of lingering around play-in tournament spots in both conferences, particularly the East, because the East is worse. Like, those teams tend to put on a decent show when they're playing against each other, because they know that if they get one over, this can improve their chances to get into the playoffs or at least a play-in spot. So I think I enjoy watching rubbish teams play each other.
Well, let's stick with some rubbish teams then, because I know that you were keen to talk more about your Minnesota Timberwolves and whether this little spurt they've had is something that you can put stock in, or whether it's just a lucky streak. The Timberwolves then, there's life in the young pups yet, it would seem. They've had a little bit of a flutter with some W's. Harry, I'm going to throw this over to you straight away. Give us your take on the current state of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
It's a tricky one for me, because obviously, as a Wolves fan, seeing, you know, waking up every morning and seeing a notification on my phone saying the Wolves have beaten somebody for a good few games in a row, and then watching the highlights on YouTube the next day and going, that was nice. Nice job. You know, I quite enjoyed that. But at the same time, we're going to lose our pick if we're not in the top three in this year's draft. And this year's draft is sick. Like, you know, the top three on most mock draft boards could all go number one, depending on the team choosing. You know, there's three incredible talents at the top of that draft board. And, you know, there are a couple, particularly I'd personally say Evan Mobley, that the Timberwolves could really do with. So it is a bit of a mixed bag. Part of me is like, you know, I wouldn't mind us getting a good pick. I'd be really chuffed if we got a good pick. But then the other part of me is like, you know, I am enjoying seeing the Timberwolves win games. And I think it does bode well for next season if the team can stay healthy. I think Chris Finch has, since he's taken over, former Sheffield Sharks head coach, big up Chris Finch, we love you. He's made some good changes. And I think at the moment, you know, when D'Lo, Karlie Towns and Anthony Edwards were all healthy, I think we're like 10-7 or something, which again, it's not incredible, but that's a playoff team. So, you know, I think it's exciting. And I think next season, should everyone remain healthy and we get Malik Beasley back, the Timberwolves could be a surprise team for a few people.
Matt, is that something you agree with? Because I'm not quite sure I see it that way.
I don't know. They were kind of picked to be sort of fighting for a playoff position this year, weren't they? And I think the Rubio going home was, you know, met with big fanfare sort of thing. But to be honest, I haven't really followed you guys.
well, because we're crap. I don't blame you.
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously done us in, I think, one game. And then, like, Kat and Edwards knocking in 40 each in one game. That was terrible. But no, like, recently, happy to see Rubio have a big game the other night against Warriors. I've been a fan of Rubio since he was in Europe, so happy to see that. And obviously, you beating Utah twice was amazing for us.
3-0 on the season, man.
Well, yeah. Join the club. so, yeah, it helped us in that way. So that made me sort of happy. But Timberwolves always disappoint me. It's always one of those teams where you want to do well. And the reason for me for that is because of Kevin Garnett. So when I started watching, you know, he won the MVP. He was in that conversation a few years before that as well. You kind of always want them to do well. Why do? And then, yeah, they just can never put it together at all. And I don't know whether this Cat D'Lo dynamic is going to work. You've got a guard, lead guard that can't defend. You've got a centre that can't defend either. And it's all well and good playing with your mates. But there was a reason that, you know, the whole Booker and those two meeting up, most people, unless you're a Twitter fan, was totally against it for that exact reason, because let's be honest, no, the three of them aren't known for defending at all. So yeah, I get disappointed seeing them, but yeah, they're 6-4 in the last 10, is it? I think.
Yep, sounds about right.
Signs of optimism.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of hit the nail on the head there in that they're still poop defensively. I think they're ranked 27th still since D'Lo's been back. They obviously need more time with both of those guys on the court, and they haven't had a huge amount of time together this season. And this season, well, the last year for Kat has just been probably, well, hands down the worst year of his life for off-court reasons. They're out west. I didn't think they'd done enough this season to get into the playoffs. I thought maybe they could push for not being 12th in the conference, but even that appears to be a bit of a stretch for them now. As Harry said, I don't understand why they're putting together this run now. They're already out of playoff contention. They're reducing their chances of, if they fall outside of the top three, if they carry on like this, it reduces something like 52% down to 30%. And if it lands outside the top three, it goes to Golden State. Why would you not want to add to that asset? Even if you didn't want to draft it, you wanted to trade it or do something to put more talent around those guys, why would you try and win games now? I don't understand it. Like, a lot of times, I hate tanking. Don't get me wrong, I hate it. Here, I just can't see why they would want to put any sort of, you know, run together at all. And I don't know what they're going to be like next season. I don't think they're going to be any better next season. I get that they'll have, ideally, health surrounding them. But I just don't see these guys winning at all. And neither of them seem to be that grab you by the throat leader that they needed. And the only person who's ever been able to do that for them in recent seasons has been Jimmy Butler. And there's just not many people that you can pick up and put into that team that will do that. And I, without that, I can't see where they're going. I think it's Chris Vernon has been saying, shout out to the Mismatch pod, former guest of this pod, actually, Chris Vernon, talks about rat teams. And he's like, if a team's a rat team and they get a couple of wins at the end of the season, they're still going to be a rat team next year. And that's the feeling I get from this Timberwolves. I just don't see how they're ever going to climb out of this hole the way this team is built at the moment. Harry, I will let you shout back at me.
Well, I obviously, as I said, I think, you know, we're going to be an outside shot, a playoff appearance next season. But, you know, I have previously made some statements and predictions about the NBA that have ended up being absolutely ridiculous. I've done that a few times. For example, I think before the season started, I said the Suns wouldn't be much higher than the 10th seed, and now they're basically the 1 seed. So, you know, we've seen how that's gone. You know, I think I do think that Kyrie Towns has made massive strides defensively this year, just to counter the fact that, you know, granted, as a whole, defensively, as you mentioned, as a team, shocking. But in terms of, you know, I think Matt, you said that neither Kat or D'Lo are good defenders. Granted, I wouldn't say Kat's a good defender yet, but he's not as bad as he was last season.
He's quick on his feet, and I mean, he's 7 foot. So even if you like just stand still, put your arms up, that's better than some of the stuff that you see.
I know, but it's he's still, in terms of his all round hustle stats, his effort that he's putting in on most plays. Don't get me wrong, we do still see Kyrie Towns kind of watching on the other side of the paint when he should be rotating to contest a shot or something. You know, that does still happen. But he's made some big strides. D'Angelo Russell, granted, he's still crap defensively. You know, that's not changed. I stand by my Robinson squash analogy in the Discord about D'Angelo Russell a couple of weeks ago. Like, you know, the Robinson squash is very expensive to get in, and it's just quite underwhelming when it's in your house. And D'Lo's kind of been the same. I stand by that analogy. But
it was a good one.
I think as a team, the Timberwolves will surprise some people next year, particularly. And okay, I can say that with more certainty if we start dropping games towards the rest of the season. I think we will see the rules start drop a few games towards the end of the season. I think this little spur has been nice for the team to kind of know that they can win games against top teams. Granted, the only real top team they've played is the Utah Jazz, but we've swept them in the season series. Unless we have one more to play, I don't think we do. But either way, we've won 3-0, as the Phoenix Suns have as well, against Utah Jazz. And, you know, I think that's good for the guys. I think that's good for the team to say, you know, we can string some wins together. I wouldn't be surprised if Gerson Rosas tells Chris Finch to start reeling it all in, because we want a top three pick. But I think next season we will surprise a few people. I'm not talking a safe playoff spot. I'm talking we're going to be in the play-in tournament next year as the 9th or 10th seed. But I think we'll see them in at least the play-in tournament, I reckon.
Okay. And one of the names we haven't mentioned is Anthony Edwards. How do you see his evolution, and how do you see him fitting into this? Is Karl Anthony Towns really going to shoulder his franchise going forwards? How do you see this working?
I think that again depends on our draft pick this if we get that top three pick this season, and if we use it on someone. Because, for example, if we bring in somebody like Jalen Green or Cade Cunningham, that's another guard in the pair of them. Both of them, particularly Jalen Green, can score at an elite level, at an NBA level, and generally will be able to do that as soon as he comes in, probably better than Anthony Edwards has so far. And so that would kind of, you know, reduce numbers. It'll probably cause a little bit of an issue. So, you know, personally for me, Jalen Green's not the guy to go with. But you choose Cade Cunningham, who can do a lot of stuff on the offensive end. He's not too, he's not great defensively, but Timberwolves prospects never are. So, you know, that's a, it would work. But Evan Mobley, for example, I think he's a, I think his comparisons have been a more mobile LaMarcus Aldridge or Chris Bosh is some of his main comparisons, which is something I think that the Timberwolves could do with somebody who can kind of just play as a bit of a rock on both ends and influence the game that way. So, but if we fall out of that top three, it'll be definitely be a much more difficult job to get into the play-in. But as I say, I think we will see the Wolves reel it in for the last couple of weeks of the season just to improve the odds as best they can.
Yeah, I think they can. Go on, go, Matt.
So do you think that they've shot themselves in the foot a bit? So you've got a dynamic of Cat, D'Lo, now Edwards, right? And D'Lo isn't really a point guard. He's a short two guard, the way he plays. Edwards is going to be better. We've already seen it. But they can't really trade D'Lo now, can they? Because really everything they do now is going to be trying to keep Cat happy. If you trade his best mate, isn't that going to kind of start rifts between your star player and the franchise? But I think they need to get rid of D'Lo to improve.
What I see the Wolves doing, and it was an interesting comparison. I can't remember the name of the podcast. It was like the On the Wire podcast, Up to the Wire podcast, and all that. And they made a comparison because Jantar Ross has been playing off the bench since his injury, putting up good numbers. He's been leading bench scorers in that period of time. And they made a comparison to a player of a similar impact and role to Manu Ginobili. And what they were saying, it made a lot of sense. He kind of led that second unit. It worked quite well. And so far, as we've seen over the last week, D'Angelo Russell coming off the bench hasn't been too bad. Whether D'Angelo Russell's ego would settle with him coming off the bench is another thing. But I think if Chris Finch could reason with him and say, you could be the Minnesota Timberwolves' future Manu Ginobili, and as much as he may think, well, that's a little bit of an insult right now, I think that'd be a good shout, actually. And then that would give Anthony Edwards the opportunity to kind of dominate the ball a bit more as he has been this last couple of weeks while D'Lo's been out, and also give the opportunity for a player like Cade Cunningham, if we were to get a top pick, to come in and fill a guard spot in the starting five next season. So it really does depend. There's a lot of ifs and ways to do things that I think would work for the Wolves from a coaching and a play style perspective, but it's it really just depends what they choose to do, and judging off history, they'll probably pick the wrong way.
Yeah, well, I think that we've spent far longer than I thought we would talking about the Timberwolves.
Yeah, me too.
So, let's move on to the Suns. We'll go in the zone, have a look at how they've done this season and how they've got to where they are. Obviously, Matt, thank you for joining the pod. Tell us a bit about Suns Fans UK, why you started it.
So it started quite a while ago, actually. I suppose when I first joined Twitter was like 2012 or 2013, just because I always thought I was the only Suns fan in the UK. So I thought, well, social media is there to connect people. I'll see what happens. I started it, and the job that I did, I didn't really have time to do anything with it, and I ended up only really retweeting what the Suns were doing anyway. So I just felt it was a bit of a waste of time. Then, what, 2 years ago? 3 years ago now, my job changed, which meant I was able to listen to podcasts while at work, which was nice. And I started listening to some Suns podcasts, and I thought, well, I've got my sort of normal Twitter, which I don't really use. Why don't I start up the old one again? So that's why on my Twitter account it says that I've been there since 2012. It's an old one, reignited. So yeah, I did it just because I thought if I feel like this, the only one around, I'm sure there's lots of other Suns fans that feel that way, and I'm sure there's a lot of other small market teams like fans that feel like that as well. And it just kind of went from there. I kind of just started chatting to other people on Suns Twitter, and then the NBA UK fans guys contacted me and just like welcomed me to the community, and it's all just kind of gone from there. And there's not only me anymore in the UK supporting the Suns, which is nice.
Yeah. Shout out to Ross McLeod, who's a long-time listener, was part of DC. He, for a long time, we thought he might be the only Suns fan in the UK. I know there are others out there. How did you become a basketball fan, and why did you pick the Phoenix Suns?
So I got introduced to playing when I was about 9. My sister's boyfriend introduced me to it. Just sort of like, he bought me a little Jordan ball. I think I said to you before, it's the same little black and red one that you've got.
Yeah, the Wilson one.
Looking around for it now.
I've got it somewhere.
With like a little water bottle.
Yeah.
and that. So yeah, I had that. And he supported the Suns. And I almost become a Rockets fan, actually, because I used to keep saying I was Charles Barkley, because I'd seen since Space Jam and saw it, he had Suns across his vest. So he was the only person I knew. But by that point, he was playing on the Rockets. He was like, oh, are you a Rockets fan? And I was like, no, I'm a Suns fan. He was like, okay, well, he plays for the Rockets. So I was almost a Rockets fan because of Charles Barkley. But yeah, so it went from there. Then he joined a local team. I started going with him as well, and it kind of just went from there. So I'd never played on an actual youth team or anything like that. Just played with the men sort of thing. So yeah, I just stayed with the Suns sort of like that, like you do with football in the UK. Your dad supports the team and you end up following them because your dad did. Sort of the only person I knew that played basketball, supported basketball, was him. So I ended up supporting them as well.
And how's the last decade been for you?
We don't talk about that. We talk about 2002 to 2010. And then we talk about 2016, 2017 to now.
Okay.
Fair enough. No, actually, funny enough, Matt Alcock, who writes for me on sunfansuk.com, put up a sort of like, say, trip down memory lane, nightmare down memory lane. Of the last 10 years. So go have a read of that. It's quite interesting, all the ups and downs. But yeah, last 10 years have been strange. To be honest, we've got the second worst owner in the league. When things are going good, he leaves it alone. When things are going bad, he decides that he's a basketball mogul and decides that Amari Stoudemire can be replaced by Hakeem Warwick. So yeah, he's not afraid of spending or anything like that. He just spends it on the wrong people in the past. But yeah, things are okay now if you ignore that stretch. I definitely wouldn't be doing the account if I'd carried on from 2012 all the way through. Advice, it's good I stepped away, I tell you.
Yeah, you say things are good now. It's kind of an understatement. This season's been incredible for you guys, obviously, not making the playoffs for the last decade, and now potentially finishing the season with the number one seed, fingers crossed, touch wood. 46-18, they're one of three teams that have a top 10 offense and defense. What's sort of changed?
It was all when James Jones took over. So we had the previous GM, Ryan McDonough. Didn't really know what he was doing. I think he just rode Danny Ainge's coattails in Boston. Danny must have told him how to interview well. Yeah, he drafted Booker, but I think that was an absolute sort of mistake on his part. I don't think he projected to see what he was like. Ayton, he was forced to draft. Number one, because of our owner supports Arizona Uni. That's where he went. So we had to draft the guy that was there as well. And Mikal Bridges, that's probably his best move he ever did. But no, when James Jones took over, I think a plan was actually put in place. A couple of months later, we got Rubio in. Obviously, we got Monty Williams to be our coach, and he got signed to a 5-year deal. And if you hear Monty Williams talk, he talks about the team as a program. Not as like, I'm coaching here. This is my program. So there's a long-term goal in there. Last year we did okay. We got some veterans in. And like I said, Rubio played excellently for us. And it just showed getting the ball out of Booker's hands to allow him to be his natural shooting guard and actually having someone to help him out on that end, because we just didn't have anything. Cam Johnson, I think he was obviously lauded as a bad pick or drafted too high, but he was exactly what we needed, because when Booker was sort of pseudo point guard for this team, he'd pass it to players that then couldn't put the ball in the bucket either. So that didn't help. So we added there last year. And then going into the bubble, they kind of, in March, I think it was, had a few good games. They were starting to get guys back from injury, put together a couple of good games, and then the league shut down. And I think the time off, I think where a lot of teams just left their guys to get on with it, it was almost like Monty treated it a bit like a college environment, I think, where he spoke to the guys every single day. He was getting them to work on things. And so when they came to the bubble, they were sort of ready to go. and they had a nothing to lose attitude. And they really impressed going 8-0 there. And I think that performance and showing what Monty could do as a coach as well, and obviously the connection he has to CP3 helped us get CP3, because players of his level don't go to teams unless they really want to. And it was quite well publicised that he asked to come and play for the Suns. I think to go back to LA as well, but I think we were one of the choices. And he said he wanted to play with Book and play under Monty again. And it's just gone from there, really. I think he's taken up a level in every sense of the word. Like the performance on court, he's a dog on the court. He doesn't allow anyone else to not be like that either. I think Booker has the same mentality. So those two together is great. I think Monty Williams has improved as a coach as well. And it's all, a lot of the stuff is attributed just to the signing of Chris Paul, but there's been a lot of internal improvement as well. So Mikal Bridges, I think, deserves at least second team all defense. He probably won't, because the narrative isn't there. I think that he'll play really well in the playoffs, and then he'll be sort of in that conversation next year. I mentioned Cam Johnson, but he's had a bit of a rough year, but he's improved in other areas other than the three-point shooting he's known for. Even Booker, his stats are down. But is that surprising? Probably not, seeing if you're now sharing the backcourt of another all-star. But he's learning how to win and come together at the end of games. And there's games where he doesn't, and that's when Chris Paul takes over. So even that, that's a learning curve for him. And DeAndre Ayton, he's completely changed his game. He came into the league as a shoot-first center, back to the basket, trying to do fadeaways like a really rubbish imitation of Patrick Ewing, I guess. He's turned into a defending pick and roll center, and it's exactly what this team needs. It's a massive combination of all of what I've just been through. I think it's the stars are kind of aligning in a way as it comes to development. And I didn't think we'd get there this quickly. I had us winning 46 this year and being fourth. So, yes, and I was seen as optimistic. So it's really blown out of the water.
I had them, I was high on them at the start of last season when they got Rubio in. I just thought that's exactly what Booker needed in the backcourt. And then obviously Ayton's ban didn't help. That derailed things last season. So I think the Suns were better last year than the perception is.
Yeah,
I don't think. And I'm not trying to take wind out the sails at all, because what they've done this year is phenomenal. No one could have predicted that. But I think the base that was already there for Chris Paul to elevate, like you say, there was a lot of things already lining up. Harry, what have you seen from the Suns this year? What's impressed you about them?
I think there's evidently been a culture change, as we've kind of spoken about, and under Monty Williams in particular. I think in terms of it's very unheard of, as Matt said, for coaches to look at it as a project and a program, rather than, you know, this is my job until I lose it kind of thing. I feel like that's a mentality that a lot of coaches have, although obviously they would never say so. I was pre-Matt's small speech there very much attributing a lot of it to Chris Paul. You know, I do think Chris Paul has been, obviously, you know, nobody said he wasn't, but Chris Paul has been massive in the development of this team and the continued development this season. To have a player like Chris Paul in there with all the young guys that have been, well, improving this season. I think somebody in the Twitch chat said something about Devin Booker being in a most improved player conversation and stuff like that. And I think that's stuff that I think wouldn't quite have happened without Chris Paul, amongst other things. But I think Chris Paul is the big X factor in the Suns' improvements, and fair play to him, because I'd written him off before the start of the season. I thought Chris Paul was not going to make a big difference. There's not going to be a big difference. They're still going to be a fringe playoff team. And, you know, now they're the number one playoff team, or looking like they will be. So fair play to them.
Yeah, so we had a question in the chat, Hoopin and Lutin, should Booker be in the MIP conversation? Now, let's broaden that out. Let's look at the award season in general. Which awards do you think Phoenix Suns players should not, you know, should be considered for, and do you think they have a shot at winning of any of them. Matt, I mean, Coach of the Year has to be, if they finish with the number one seed, just the way that the voting goes, it has to go to Monty Williams, you'd think.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, especially as most people didn't have, well, I think I saw some ratings of the Suns being not even a play-in team all the way up to like fifth or fourth, like I rated them. So if you're one of these guys that has a vote and you said that they were going to be barely in the playoffs, surely he's definitely exceeded your expectations of what is. And so, yeah, I think so. It's hard to deny it. I know that because it's New York, Tom Thibodeau, whatever you pronounce it.
Thibodeau.
Yeah, that's it. Thibodeau. I know he will get some votes or whatever because of New York, but yeah, I think Monty Williams. I also think James Jones should be considered the Executive of the Year as well. I know Sean Marks is getting loads of press about it once again because of New York, but he's getting superstars turn up at his doorstep, knocking on the door, going, "Can I play for your team, mate?" Yeah, all you've got to do is sort of make a bit of space. And that's easier than getting, you know, traded for people and that sort of thing. And I know it's going to be, oh, we traded for Harden, but Harden wanted to play there. It hasn't, you know, a lot of our core we drafted in or got on steel trades, like Saric, for example, is our one of our key guys off the bench. He was a draft day trade and that sort of thing. But yeah, I think James Jones should be up there for that as well.
Harry, you shook your head at Monty Williams for Coach of the Year.
Well, it's essentially for the same reason as Matt then outlined with Tom Thibodeau, is because he plays in New York. And if New York continue to play well towards the end of the season, continue to win games, I think for me at least, Tom Thibodeau is a favourite for Coach of the Year. Which I never thought I'd be saying after his stint in Minnesota. I thought his coaching career was going to kind of trail off there, but he's done absolutely incredibly in New York. And I don't think, yeah, Monty Williams would deserve it, 100% he would deserve it. But, you know, you do have to consider the external factors that occur when you're thinking about the NBA end of season awards. And so, you know, I just think it would be a Tom Thibodeau award to lose if the Knicks continue to play well.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I get that the market plays some role in it in terms of Tibbs's, traction, we'll call it, will be higher. But these are voted on by national media that cover the league, so I don't think they can get away anymore with just following the bigger market teams. I just think there's more of an onus on them to be responsible and do their due diligence. That's why I think Monty's more likely to get it. I absolutely think Tibbs has done fantastically in New York. Just the way they've Julius Randle as an all-star and on the outskirts of the MVP conversation is just ridiculous. Speaking of MVPs, do you think a member of the Suns should be in the conversation? Because we've not really heard that at all. We more get the conversation of, well, who is actually their best, most impactful player? Do you think that's fair? Do you think that there should be some consideration given to whichever Sun you'd like to suggest?
So Chris Paul got some traction this week, but once again, I know I'm going to say like I hate the media, but I don't think it's a coincidence that we went on an Eastern road trip. We played really well. We broke the Knicks record, their win streak, sorry. And then he's in the conversation, or he's gone up higher in the MVP conversation. I think the problem is that earlier in the season, it was a question who was the better player on our team, whether it was Booker or Chris Paul. So I think they're potentially going to take votes away from each other, because it's kind of like, with your still question as whether you're even the best player on your team, how can you be the MVP? And he's done great. I'm not going to say he hasn't. He's done fantastically, and he is the team's MVP. But I don't think he just hasn't had a better season than people like Jokic or even Embiid, really. But yeah, it would be like a fairy tale sort of ending if he ended up getting it.
Yeah, I can't see it going out of Jokic's hands, to be honest. I know that on the whole, DC have been pretty quick on the Jokic bandwagon this season. I think we were calling it in December when someone at the same time was saying that they should consider sacking Mike Malone, who were like six games into the season. I can't think who it was. What are your concerns and worries going forwards as we enter into the get into the playoffs then? Where are you expecting this team to go?
So I've been asked this a few times. I have them because I think, well, it might change now because Clippers have dropped a bit, but I was seeing us play the Clippers maybe in the second round or the Lakers in the second round. So I have been conservative and been saying we're going to get to the second round. That's might just be me having 10 years of bad memories sort of holding me back from being too optimistic. But I think if we have to get to the second round, in my opinion, if we get knocked out in the first round, I think the Chris Paul experiment will be seen as a failure.
No way.
I do. I think that.
A failure. Okay.
Well,
so
not
I get
complete
that.
Failure, but I think the expectation is if when you get someone like Chris Paul and add it to the team of talent that we've got, a first round exit, unless, like we mentioned earlier, something happens where the Lakers end up being a first round team, I think there shouldn't be too much of an excuse not to get to the second round.
I mean, it's always disappointing if you're a high seed and you get knocked out of the first round. I mean, it's always an upset. But the way that this team's elevated, and I also get that historically Chris Paul teams peak in the regular season. I still worry for his health. I've seen too many pulled hamstrings, you know, touch wood, too many pulled Chris Paul hamstrings. You know, the old man injury that we're seeing people like Mike Conley suffer with now. And I know that the Suns have an excellent medical staff and historically have just worked miracles. They're, I don't know what they are, some kind of crazy sun-worshipping soothsayers, but they keep players at their prime for longer than anywhere else. So I'm sure they're doing all they can. The guy's basically Iron Man this season, hasn't missed a game. I don't know. I just don't think it'd be... I don't think you'd call it a failure. Obviously, you'd be disappointed. I mean, it's difficult to say who they're going to face in the first round because of the play-in, obviously. At the minute, we're looking at... where are we? So we've got the 7, 8, 9, 10. So if things stay the way they are, it could be the Lakers who are the 7th seed if they lost in the 7th, 8th matchup. I'm pretty confident they would be in the 7th seed, so you'd miss them. So it'd be Memphis, Golden State, or San Antonio. There's no way you could lose in that first round. Although I get what you're saying, if you lost, it would be.
That's what I mean. Those three teams, you'd think that we'd have the advantage all day. That's what I mean. If we lost one of them, I think it'd be a disappointment. I think it would be a failure in a sense.
Maybe. Oh, I don't know. But okay, so you've got
maybe it's because I'm really intertwined with, you know, Suns Twitter and all that sort of stuff, and the expectations when you're involved in that those conversations with other fans, it's because of that, but I don't know. I think the way they perform to have a first round exit, I think it would probably not quite as bad because they were a good team before, but it might feel a bit like Dallas and Golden State, 14 years ago today or yesterday, whenever it was.
Oh, okay. Maybe. We believe Warriors re-emerging. Harry, where do you think the Suns get this postseason?
I also had them as a second round exit. I don't have them beating Denver in a playoff series, beating Los Angeles in either of Los Angeles teams in a playoff series, despite how good they have been this season. I don't have them doing that. And of course, I think you have to take into consideration that playoff basketball is very different to regular season basketball. And a lot of the young guys on this Phoenix Suns team haven't touched playoff basketball before. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be, you know, it's not like you're stepping into a whole new world of basketball, but it's very different and it's going to take some adjusting. So, yeah, I agree in the fact that I think they should get past the first round. If they don't, it'll be disappointing. But at the same time, I don't think you can really be disappointed with the season they've had because I don't think anyone was expecting them to be in the top, you know, three of the West, let alone in the conversation for the number one seed. But yeah, I also had them for a second round exit to a Los Angeles team or to Denver.
They could get an absolute bloodbath of a run and go through the Lakers, Clippers, you know, assuming not necessarily get through, but they could end up their route to the finals being through both LA teams and then Denver, which would just be, or Utah, which is just, that's, I mean, that's a bloodbath. Yeah. Okay. So going forwards then, how long do you see this level of not even this level, but how long do you see this team being able to compete for? Because Chris Paul is getting on a bit. He's got a couple more years left on a huge contract.
And he can't out this summer as well.
He ain't opting out of that money. No one else is going to pay him that.
Really, let's be honest,
no one else is paying him that. So where, how long do you see this running for? Is this the Cinderella story and the bubble bursts? Harry's nodding.
I really hope not. I hope that he can actually keep it together and stay healthy next year as well. But like you pointed out, I think he's only missed like 3 games this year. And that wasn't, I think they said it was like a muscle pull slightly, but I think it was more of a sneaky way of resting him. Yeah, he played a lot of games.
Did not play old. Yeah, he's played 63 so far this season. Okay, let's move on from the Suns. I do hope they do well. They've been fun to watch this season.
Me too, yeah.
They deserve some success. And that Western Conference is just an absolute bloodbath. It's going to be a hell of a postseason. Let's move on to nothing but Nick's silly nonsense.
Nothing but Nick's silly nonsense.
Okay, so Nick's obviously not here, but Line of Duty, which for anyone not based in the UK is a police drama show. That's, I don't know, really know what it's about. To be honest, I don't watch it. But anyway, Line of Duty has captivated TV audiences with its look into the dark side of policing. My question to you is, if you had to assemble a team of officers from the world of basketball to investigate and expose bent coppers, who are you choosing and why? Please note that after high-profile incidents of having undercover burner accounts exposed, Kevin Durant and Brian Colangelo are both excluded from eligibility. So, Matt, I'll come to you first. Who are you taking... does he want a whole start in 5? I don't know. Just give me who you've got as who would be.
Okay, I've come up with 3.
Okay.
So this one is just because it's a cool nickname. So I've got Mikal Bridges from the Suns. And the reason behind that is because a lot of people on Suns Twitter call him the Warden because he locks people up.
Way.
Yeah, kind of had to do that one. Second one is another Sun. But he wasn't on the Suns when this happened, just to put it out there. So during the bubble, there was loads of rumours and jokes that Chris Paul had like a bat phone to the league office, dobbing people in when they broke the rules. So I just thought, you know, he's already undercover for them. And obviously he's the president of the Players Association as well. So he's got his foot sort of on both sides of the line. So he'll be there as well. And then I thought, if you're going undercover, you need to be a really good actor. So I thought about the people in the league that kind of act up to the refs or flop a little bit, maybe, allegedly flop. So I've gone with Trae Young. he's got very good acting. Like you breathe on him and he's flying around all over the place. So yeah, they're the 3 that I kind of picked out. But obviously, you could replace Trae Young with any of the flopping, well-known floppy guys in the league.
Good choices. Harry, who have you got?
I've gone with, I wanted to go with I also picked 3 guys because I figured, to me, a crack team is 3 people. Don't know why, but that's what I decided in my head. A crack team is 3 people. So I went with guys who know the ins and out of the police force because they've had run-ins with the police before. So my first one was Malik Beasley, who, of course, had a very interesting off season before this season with a ongoing investigation into drug usage and threats of violence. And of course, he did plead guilty this season to threats of violence and has a 120-day jail term awaiting him when the season ends. So I'm sure he'll be looking forward to that, although it is expected he'll spend that at home. So maybe he won't get to learn the ins and outs of the police force, even though he wouldn't in jail anyway. But anyway, he's been in the police stations a few times. He knows how it works. He's a top guy. The second one was J.R. Smith. It's well known that this young or well, not necessarily a young man anymore, but he's had a good few run-ins with the police as well. He was pulled over in Miami in 2012 for riding an electric scooter without a license. And he broke a fan's phone in 2018 because they were recording him or something like that. And you may remember that one. He got in a little bit of trouble because he smashed up a fan's phone because they were taking pictures of him and he didn't want them to. And my last one was Dennis Rodman. I like including Dennis Rodman in a Nixon nonsense question, as I did with the drag race thing a couple of weeks ago. But because he recently revealed, I think a couple of weeks ago, that he'd been arrested over 100 times during his NBA career. And so evidently he'd lead the operation with all the knowledge he'll have accumulated. So it'd be Captain Dennis Rodman and Malik and JR, his sidekicks.
I mean, I don't watch the show, but in my head, I did not think it would be people being arrested who would have to be the crack team. So maybe I've gone way off the ball.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, that is. I went with four. I went with Jimmy Butler because he's just a hard ass. So I can imagine him, although I'm not sure he could stay under cover for long. James Johnson, because no one really remembers him, but the dude is literally an MMA fighter. He could just destroy anyone. Because I assumed you have to be pretty tough to be an undercover cop. TJ McConnell. Wouldn't suspect him, but he's just like an absolute thief. Steals the ball a lot. You know, espionage maybe. Bit of undercover work there. And then finally, Grayson Allen. Got a reputation for being dirty. So, you know, tripping people up. So that would be my four that I've gone for. Let us know who you would pick in your line of duty NBA crack team. Talking D, discourse on Discord. Lots going on. Come and join us. discord.me/doubleclutch. The Top Shot channel has been popping a bit recently. I don't think either of you guys play Top Shot.
I muted that channel.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. Shout out to Point Wolf Ange, who curates basically all the latest drop details for us and fires it in there before we've got the emails from Top Shot directly anyway. Lets us know when and how things are happening. I managed to get a pack just before we went live tonight, so lucky me, get to open that after this. Fantasy League updates. We are through to the finals of the Fantasy League. Two good semis. Now it's time for the big dance. It's time to jingle versus our own Tom Hall's Raging Bowl. You notice that Tom's been absent for a few weeks. He's just channeling his inner LeBron, and he's gone zero dark 30 for the duration of the playoffs. Time to jingle is a massive Jazz fan, Scott Sycamore, who has four Utah players on his roster. The two actually met in week two, and it was a very tense 6-5 win to Raging Bowl. So good luck to you both this week. Shout out to Wade County, who got knocked out this week, alongside one of my favorite names, ID to One More. It's just one of the best names. Yeah, excellent. You should get points for that.
It should be like an award for that.
Should get an award for the best name.
I'm baffled. I win that award.
No, Andre Drummond Bass. It's all right. It's okay. It's tepid at best. Had a couple of listener questions. Jonah, as the photo of Taco Fall being taught to swim by Cantor and Brown at Disney resurfaced on my Twitter feed today, it made me think, if you had to choose a point guard and a center to form a swimming pool wrestling team, I don't know how he went from that to that. Point guard on the shoulders of a center to go up against other players. Who would you pick and why? Harry?
I went with, because this centre and point guard combo, we've actually seen the point guard on this centre's shoulders before briefly in a video from before I was a basketball fan. It was Nate Robinson and Shaquille O'Neal. I think when they were both on the Celtics, there was a clip of Nate Robinson while Shaq wasn't looking and standing under the basket. He went and dunked on Shaq and then proceeded as he was doing so to hold onto the rim and kind of put his legs over his shoulders and kind of sat on his shoulders. We know how that looks. I think they're both bulldogs, obviously. They wouldn't mess around in your swimming pool wrestling ring. And I think they'd be the team to be in an NBA water wrestling scrap.
With Nate involved, show. Though, it'd definitely have to be wrestling, wouldn't it? Because boxing, he would just be out straight away.
Well, we don't know how good at boxers the rest of the NBA stars are. So obviously, you know, their talent is in their hands, so they might not be able to throw a punch. I think it's Jalen Rose is like, it's always the hold me back because I can't break these multi-million dollar fingers. Matt, who are your choices?
I also went for Shaq. It's size and strength. How are you really going to push him over in a pool? Also went for a point guard.
He's done WWE
as well, hasn't he? He has done WWE.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he went put for a table on AEW recently. So yeah, I went with him. Also went with a point guard that he's played with. I went with Penny Hardaway. I mean, he's 6'7" point guard, long arms, long legs. To play that game, you need to be able to actually push people if you've got long arms and legs, keep distance. So, yeah.
Yeah, not a bad shout. I almost went for Shaq because I get it. You know, the size, just the frame is huge. He's not a skinny guy. But I thought you need, you know, the lower the center of gravity, the better. And yeah, it's got to be a center. So I've gone for Wes Unseld. Obviously, I'm taking the peak of his powers. 6'7" center, whose nicknames were the Wide U and Oak Tree. He was just an absolute beast. So give me him as my bottom. And then on top, I'm going to take, to be honest, if I was taking Shaq, I was going to put Muggsy Bogues in there because it just made me think of, Tari won't remember this, but do you remember Ace Ventura 2 where there's the fight scene in Ace Ventura 2 and the dude walks out, the big dude, and then he's got the tiny dude on his back? That's where my mind went with that one. But no, I've gone for, on top of Wes Unseld, I've gone with Reggie Jackson, who's 6'2", so I'm sticking to my low center of gravity, but he's got a 7-foot wingspan. So he's going to do the whole, you're not even getting close to me, I can hold you back like 4 inches further away than you can get to me. So those are the two that I would pick. Know online what you think, yeah, you know, would make the best team, who you would have. Second question came from Hugh. What NBA final series do you look forward to, but it ultimately disappointed in the way that the line of duty finale did last night? Again, we've got two line of duty.
Right.
Apparently it's the thing to watch, but except for it. The finale. So obviously the finale of it was disappointing last night. Which NBA finals series disappointed you, Matt?
I found this one quite tough. I don't always watch the NBA finals religiously. I try and watch them, but it's not always easy. So I've taken it back a bit, and there's a bit of a story behind it. So I've gone for the 2007 finals, Spurs versus Cavs.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason for this is because, as a Suns fan, I hate it when the Spurs win. Even now, if I see them lose, I'm happy. So that year was a year where the whole Amari and Boris Diaw come off the bench and miss two games. So therefore, pretty much we lost the series because of that. So I wanted Utah to beat them in the finals of the Western Conference. They didn't. So I wanted LeBron James to work his magic, really be the underdog and take down these bullies. But then they just got swept. So I was really looking forward to them losing, but then they won.
Yeah, that's a good shout. That's a really good shout. Harry, did you have one?
I did. Mine is not quite. I couldn't really think of like an interesting one because in the pretty much the time that I've been a fan of basketball, virtually every single NBA finals has been a good one. I think the last few, even with the Warriors winning every single one virtually, they've still been good final series. So I just went with 2017 because that was the year after the Cavs came back from 3-1 and then they kind of folded to the big four in Golden State, which I guess you couldn't really expect much more, but it was a bit disappointing. So that's the one I went with. No more reason than that because I can't really comment on finals pre 2014 because I wasn't a basketball fan then.
Fair enough. Lakers Nets 2002 stuck out to me because the Nets just, anytime Shaq's counterpart is Todd McCulloch, it's never going to end well. But even for me, like the 2019 finals, the way that KD and Klay Thompson got injured, and it just really took the excitement out of it for me. I was just gutted by that final. So what, 2 years ago? Not even. Let's move on. Games of the week. Matt, what's your pick for game of the week?
Well, you stole mine.
Did I?
I remember, right? Yeah, I was just about to ride it in, and then you were there. So I'm going with a Suns game. I tried not to go with a Suns game, but I have ended up going with a Suns game. Suns at Lakers, because it's probably the most full roster that they have had against us. So I think it's going to be a bit of a test, and as we've discussed, potentially an early round matchup.
Yep, potential 1-8 or 2-7, depending on how the chips fall. Who's winning it? I'm going to put you on the spot. I never normally do this. Oh. Just going to see if you're going to completely homer it or whether you're going to slide. I mean, the Lakers are 0-2. They're what, 1-6 with AD back. He's averaging 16.5 points or something like that. Not AD numbers at all. Maybe that Achilles is still...
I just think they'll turn up. So in my weekly roundup, I put us having a 3-1 week. And I did say we'd lose to either the Hawks or the Lakers. So a loss.
Loss.
I think they'll turn up for us. I think there'll be something going on. Because, I mean, the other two games in the season, they were fairly tight. So, yeah.
Harry, who you got?
I've gone with Friday's Battle of Los Angeles and the Lakers-Clippers because obviously ever since the two Los Angeles teams added their big personnel, it's been a game that people have kind of circled on the calendar and gone, oh, that could be a spicy one. And over the last couple of years, they've kind of disappointed. But again, I'm kind of hoping that this time it won't disappoint because AD and LeBron are back. I don't think Kawhi and Paul George are injured right now. I could be wrong because I'll be honest, I've stopped paying attention to the Clippers this season. They've kind of just trundled along, haven't they? Don't know what they need to do. Not really special, but they're going to be in the playoffs. But anyway, the Battle of Los Angeles is my choice for the game of the week on Friday, early Friday morning.
I've also gone with the Friday game, 3 a.m. tip-off, Denver at Utah. The second and third seed as it currently stands could have big implications for where all the final seedings fall. And it's a chance for Jokic to, add to his MVP candidacy by going against who many would call the defensive player of the year, despite the fact he seems to be getting cooked by just about everyone on the highlight reels at the minute. That's it from us tonight. Thanks to everyone who dropped in, who's listening back. Thank you for all the follows. We've had a Twitch follow come through. I think it was last week. Same J1990, shout out to you. If you're not, make sure you go follow us at Double Clutch UK, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. Discord.me/Double Clutch is our community where we talk hoops basically every single day of the week. And then twitch.tv/Double Clutch UK. Matt, where can people find you?
Twitter and Instagram, SunsFansUK. And if you want to read about the Suns games and whatever else comes into my head, it's SunsFansUK.com.
And on Fridays, you've got an Insta show.
Yes, I have. It's called Go On My Suns. Any US people listening probably don't get that reference. It's a football term, so it's a bit of a pun there. Yeah, just try and meet a Suns fan. Bit of an extension of why I started the account. Yeah, I'm going to try something new soon as well, leading into the playoffs, so look out for that.
Oh, a little tease there. Awesome. We will be back next week. We've got a couple of things planned as well for the next couple of weeks. It seems like everyone wants to get, we've not even had a chance to sort of chill this compressed season. There hasn't been the dog days we've had previously where you're just waiting for those last 6 weeks to roll over into April. Obviously the season's moved now, but playoffs are upon us. The play-in, there's just no let up this season, and it's great. I couldn't want it any differently. I think they should do this every year, except for the global pandemic side of things, because that sucks. Thank you. Thanks, Matt, for joining us. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We will catch you next week.
Playoffs? What are you talking about? Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?